This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
It's so good to have Elizabeth Barker back with us again for this news review. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you on, and people can follow you. That's what they will find over on Twitter. They can find all your thoughts. California Frizz. Do you miss the sunshine at all?
Yes, I do. Every day. The vitamin D. Yes, I do. But I'm just so used to the British weather now. I never get excited about it at all. So
used to the British weather. That's a sad phrase, but we'll move on. We'll not do on the weather. Let me bring the first story, which is a story that actually intrigued me and my pod. Never actually, we had a guest on, never dumped a story that I've just seen, but I did find it intriguing, and that is, as I am a plane buff, it was this one. Boeing whistleblower John Barnett found dead in US, and he worked for Boeing 30 years and was going to give evidence. And just before he was going to give evidence, he had a suicide issue and is gone. But what were your thoughts? I don't know if you'd come across this before, Elizabeth. What were your thoughts on this?
I actually hadn't. So when you sent me the link, I found it quite interesting to read. My first thought was it's literally like the storyline of a film that we would watch. You know, when you see people that are going to give evidence in a case and then suddenly their life is at risk. And clearly, I think it was with this guy. He'd been saying for quite some time that there were things wrong with the standards of the products on these planes and safety issues. And obviously these big corporations, these companies, they don't want that being aired to the public, because I think they also don't want extra lawsuits or whatever to come from it. Because there was an incident, wasn't there, where recently where the door blew off one of the planes. And so he was obviously, he'd come out and he'd been in the industry for 30 years and came out to give evidence in this case. I just think it's so suspicious.
It is. And
suddenly is found in a car park in his car or truck or whatever, and he's found dead. Just he'd had a meeting with lawyers. It's very suspicious, very suspicious. And it really highlights the corruption as well within these companies. They have billions and billions of pounds and they care more for profit than they do their customer safety and for true factual information being provided to the public via a legal case.
Yeah, and something, from my point of view, something weird is going on with Boeing. Not only the one you mentioned, but literally a couple of days ago, there were three aircraft incidents and emergency landings with engine going on fire, with cockpit filling with fumes, and there was a third one. Oh, yeah, tire falling off out of LA. Yesterday, there was another one that had to do emergency landing. I think it might have been Al Jazeera, actually, something like that, went into the production line in Boeing down in South Carolina, and they interviewed. And out of the 15 people, I don't know how they were allowed to, but out of the 15 staff they talked to, the 15 they asked, would you fly on a Boeing plane? 10 out of 15 said, hell no.
Really?
Really?
I mean, that doesn't, I don't know, but I absolutely love flying. I love planes. My dad was in the Air Force, and I think I get it from him. So, it doesn't fill me with much confidence hearing things like that and reading this article and hearing this story about this guy, this whistleblower. It doesn't fill me with much confidence because he was trying to highlight as well with regards to the masks on the plane and how insufficient the percentage of masks that were safe and were unsafe. And it's just like, we have no idea of this when we purchase a ticket and jump on a plane. We just think, okay, everything's safe. All the safety checks are done. Of course, they have the best parts and the best standards and best processes. It's all safe and fine. Clearly, there's lots going on behind the scenes that we're unaware of, and actually could be detrimental if we were to jump on a plane.
It would be. And I saw an article, it might have been in the Mirror, the Mail the other day, saying, here are a list of airlines that don't fly Boeing products and you can pick. But I don't know whether it's the diversity, because talking to my older son about this and trying to work out what exactly is happening, and I was saying it's just because they've employed too many pink-haired, one-leg lesbians, and therefore that they've moved away from excellence. And he was saying, oh, where's your evidence? I don't have that evidence, but I believe that's true, but I don't know.
Why does that word creep into every single step, every single element of our lives? Oh, God. I don't know if that's true, but it wouldn't surprise me, because everywhere else seems to be, doesn't it? So
it does. Let's move on to here in the UK, a beautiful organisation which you've all grown to love is Hope Not Hit, or Hit Not Hope, depending which way you want to put it. And this was Calvin had put this up. And Calvin's response thing has been echoed by many others. So chuffed to have made it into this year's Hope Not Hit report. Such a helpful guide of people to follow. It's a who's who of culture warriors fighting for our nation and for common sense. Thank you, Lammy Nicole, for collating a list of British patriots. God bless you. Calvin's response is beautiful. I've seen every year they've done this, maybe the fifth year, and I see the trio, the GB News trio, ex-GB News trio, bottom left there, of Lauzadan and Calvin. How do you see this report and Hope Not Hit in general?
When you sent it over to me, it was the first time that I saw it, but I thought that Calvin's response was brilliant, and he's very good with his words, isn't he? As you know, he's very good and precise. But I just think that I read it and I, what's the point? I find it just, I know we have to have criticism, and I know we have to have, you know, I've just done that. I just said, I'm not going to say, you know, and I've sat there and done it. I'm sorry. Back to what we were talking about. Yes, I think that these articles, I just think, what do they get out of it? You're just constantly highlighting the same thing, and it's very much clearly that's their opinion, and they dislike, you know, certain individuals. So yeah, I just think I read it and I thought it's just like something else that I see on Twitter most days.
I usually try and print it off, because it is fantastic reading. I've learned a lot of who the good people are and who the less good people, because they divide it up into, I think, populist figures. So I know Hearts of Oak get a section. I know Lotus Eaters get a section. Obviously, GB News get a very big section. And I saw Nigel Farage there the other day, been very happy about his big piece. And then they go into more fringe groups that are, they call far right, then Nazi groups. So I was kind of pleased. I was regarded as a populist, but not necessarily a far right Nazi. So I don't know whether that's an improvement or not. But they do a lot of time, and it is really well done. And obviously they want to use that to attack, but it is fantastically informative, I think. And I talked to David Vance yesterday, and he wasn't in it. So I think I would encourage all our viewers and listeners to make sure and contact Hope Not Hit and do tell them that David Vance is an awful figure and deserves to be included, because it is really a badge of honour.
Yeah, no, I loved what Calvin put, and I think that it was well written. That it was. I just think that you have to kind of have that stance about it, and be happy that you're triggering and you're making your points and people want to write about you. Sometimes I just think, though, when I see some certain articles and certain things, I just think it's just repeating what's already been said, and it's just attack, 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 like you say. But you're clearly doing something. These people are, these individuals like Calvin and Dan and Lawrence, they're out there, so they're going to get things like this written about them and said about them. It's just part of being who they are.
And of course, it is. They do receive some kind of funding from the government. I don't know at what level. But that kind of fits in the story. I will talk about it, but nothing to bring up about the yesterday, the government talking about their extremism definition. And it talks about those who want to stir up hate or whatever, but also who are intolerant. And that makes it very wide. And I've seen a lot of concerns that that would include if someone is pro-life, as I would be, then what does that mean? That's intolerant to the individual that wants to take the life of a child, or if you're pro-women, then you're intolerant to men who think they're women. And that word tolerance opens it up to massive legal challenges. So you probably share the same concern as I do.
Yeah, I do, because I think that how far are they going to take it? And I also find it's just going to become so ridiculous that we can't say what we think and feel, and we can't actually, we won't be able to move, you know, and I mean with regards to our speech, because you should be able to say that you're pro-life, and that shouldn't get you in trouble for saying that you're pro-life. The same as if somebody says, well, I'm pro-choice, or I'm pro-this, or I've had this situation personally, they should be able to say that. Doesn't mean that it's tolerant, intolerant. We should just be able to say it. I just feel like it's getting to the point where I hear it a lot. You can't say that. You can't say that. And I sit there and I'm like, why can't I say that? That is what I think. That is what I feel. But in this day and age, you can't say that, because that will offend somebody, or that's the wrong thing to say. And I'm like, well, what's the right thing to say then? Because not everything that one person, it's not a straight, narrow, do you know what I mean? We're all different. We all come from different walks of life, and we have different things and environments that have shaped us, our opinions, our beliefs. And it's the same with like religion. I think it's actually extremism how we've got to where we are now, where we can't literally say certain things, or if we do, we're going to get taken to court, we're going to get banned from something, we're going to get cancelled. I just think we've just stretched too far. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And of course, some of us do like stirring up a debate and conversation, because that's part of what makes life interesting, and you want to get a response. And to me, the worst is whenever you've contact with individuals and they just kind of bleh, just in that middle, they don't really know what they think about anything. You want someone to be opinionated, because that's what makes us individuals. And it seems that the government are simply trying to criminalize strong viewpoints.
It is an attack on the opinion, an attack on a viewpoint. Because I think they very much, with the media and propaganda, they want to tell us what to think and how to think. They don't want us thinking for ourselves or critically thinking. Debate is healthy. It's where we learn. It's where we get insights. We get different viewpoints. We should always be up for debate. And what I find, especially in the media, certain media outlets, they don't allow debate. If you've got a panel of people, it's very much a narrative that is being fed to the viewers. And if there's one person on a panel that is against all the other people on the panel, they are almost given the shortest amount of time to speak. They're shut down by the others. And it's very much sort of the mob kind of mentality. And so I think debate is healthy, and we need different opinions and different viewpoints. And we should not ever allow that to be shut down or taken away from us at all.
100%. Let's move on to another issue that you're not allowed to debate or discuss, and that is, I'll bring up this. So we'll play the clip, and Loza put up, make up your mind, Rishi Sunak, they're either safe and effective or not. Which one is it? Let me play the clip for you. It's just, I think, a minute. Let me play this.
Christopher Chope.
Mr. Speaker, may I thank my right honourable friend for meeting me 6 weeks ago to discuss the plight of victims of COVID-19 vaccine damage. And may I ask him, following that discussion and his very sympathetic response during the GB People's Forum to Mr. John Watt, who himself is a victim of COVID-19 vaccine damage, whether the government will be supporting my COVID-19 vaccine payments bill this Friday.
Mr. Speaker, can I thank my honourable friend for raising the issue and the conversation that I had with him previously, and extend my sympathies to all of those who have been affected by this. I will, of course, make sure that he can meet with the Secretary of State to discuss his bill, and as I committed to him, we are looking at the issue in some detail to make sure that the policies we've got are providing the support that they need to.
Marshal de Cordova.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, let me remove that. I've got lots of thoughts on this. I know you do. He didn't seem to answer the question whether or not he would support Christopher Cho. But yeah, what are your thoughts when you see that? And then we'll delve into kind of how the maybe narrative has changed a bit since Andrew Bridgen first raised this a long time ago.
I also noticed how he didn't answer the question. Tend to do that very well, don't they? They kind of divert what they were originally asked and never give us the answer. Sorry, repeat your question.
No, so what were your thoughts on that? Because there's a lot in this, and this has been, we're years after. But obviously, you've got other Conservative MPs now wanting to bring bills in because of those who have been vaccine damaged.
Well, first of all, I think we should applaud any MP that is standing in that room and they are highlighting it and bringing it to the attention of the others who have so widely ignored it for nearly 4 years. So the vaccine was rolled out in the UK, I believe, December 2020. So it's you know, coming into its fourth year of it having been rolled out to the public. There's lots of people who have been vaccine damaged. There's people that have died from the vaccine. The list is growing. We have the issue with the excess deaths that have been highlighted in Parliament by Andrew Bridgen. And I just think that it's been ignored, it's been laughed at, it's been looked at as a conspiracy, it's been looked at as anti-vax propaganda, and it's not. It is a thing. And I saw, did you see the clip of the Scottish guy, John, who actually questioned Rishi?
Yeah.
Long ago, it went viral when it happened. He was absolutely brilliant because he's actually a victim. Yeah. Been, you know, vaccine injured, and he's got friends that have had legs amputated and all sorts. So he is fully aware, and Rishi, I think, was quite taken aback by his stance. But I have to say, I very much enjoyed Rishi having to deal with that situation, because it was almost, he couldn't deny it, he couldn't ignore it. He was there in the room with many people that had issues with the vaccine. I think that it needs to be dealt with. They're clearly not effective, and I think they need to actually get to the point where they are honest with the public and honest and set up something where they can actually start dealing with those who have been injured or those who are worried about having had the vaccine and this is all coming out. Because I know I didn't get vaccinated, but if I had been, I would be worried.
Yeah, not completely. I worry because supposedly there is a system in place to actually pay out, but we've had a number of people on, and one of them seems extremely slow. But why would there be a payout if the line is that these are 100% safe? Therefore, there is no need to pay out. So it seems with those individuals, they are in a horrendous situation health-wise, work-wise, family-wise. And on top of that, they need to fight and argue for the right to get the money they're entitled to. And to put legislation through that would make that a much faster process would be fantastic. But that probably would mean the government would have to admit that there are side effects to it.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? It's if they then bring something in place, they're then admitting liability, really, because they pushed and pushed and pushed this, along with the media and celebrities and God knows who. They pushed that we all had to have this, and that we needed it. So they'd have to admit that they did wrong by the public. And I think the most amount, the top amount you can get on that scheme that they've brought out is £120,000. I don't know about you, but my life isn't worth £120,000. And I think that is literally if it's caused the death of somebody, that's the top end of what somebody would be compensated. So I don't think the government understand the price of a father or a mother or a child that would be deeply affected. And people are unable to work. They've lost their livelihoods. There's, like I said, there's people that have had to have amputation. There's young people that can't do sports because they've been diagnosed with myocarditis or heart problems. This is major. This is major to people's lives. Our health is our wealth. It is.
It is. And obviously, I get that money. We're assuming, I think I'm correct, that comes from the public purse. So these companies don't have to pay. So it's actually more taxpayers' money goes into instead of those companies that actually carried out the harm in the first place.
It's sickening. It's sickening to think as well that there's no liability with regards to these companies. There was no testing. There was no long-term data. It was all rushed. It was all just put on as safe and effective. They pushed that so much. How say they couldn't? I don't understand how they could do that on a product, a thing that they actually hadn't tested or there was no long-term data for. How can you promote something without actually knowing? I can guarantee it's safe and effective. They could never guarantee it. And we're now seeing, as each day passes and as there's more names added to the list of excess deaths, or that the yellow card scheme, that, you know, the data analysis prints for each vaccine that was provided to the public, the amount of vaccine injuries and harms is mounting up daily.
It really is. And when you look, sorry, last thing, when you look at other jabs, vaccines that have been removed from the market for a very small proportion of adverse effects, and yet you look at this and it seems to be much larger, and it's irrelevant if it works 99% of the time, but 1% you've got severe harm. That's a hell of a lot of people, and it seems as though others were removed because they had a small amount, and yet this is a much larger portion. But if it's not acknowledged, then I guess the government don't have to do anything.
They can't acknowledge it, because then they are admitting that they were wrong, and they are admitting that it. I've said it myself when I've done certain posts on Facebook or Twitter, that it is a crime against humanity, because it is. And I think that that's why they can't admit it, because I think it would blow up. It would erupt. I actually think that there are a lot of people that genuinely believe that the government has their best interests at heart. I'm not one of them. but there are people that are out there that think that way. So I think as well, the government are aware that if they do admit and take accountability for people listening and going off of what they said, I think that those people would then, there would be an eruption of, hold on a minute, what have you done to us? This is not right. And I think that they don't want that to happen, because there were plenty of us that went against it, that marched in the streets, that said, hell no, that's not going anywhere near me. We could see that the way it was being pushed was unlawful and was scaremongering. And we took our stand. A lot of people thought we were called anti-vax. A lot of people thought we were mad for taking that stance. And I think those people that I personally know that thought that about me, they very much did believe, why would the government do that? Why would the government, why would they want to harm us? Why would they tell us it's safe and effective if it's not? So, and I would say they don't know it's safe and effective. Therefore, that's why my choice is I don't want it, because I have no confirmation that it is. There's no guarantee. And I've not been unwell, I've been fine. So I'd rather go down the route I went down than have to fill in a form for compensation. You know, that's my that was my personal choice. I understand people have their reasons for taking it and for not taking it, but the government do need to take accountability. But when do governments ever take true accountability for their actions against society?
Yeah, very, very little. Let's go on to a good news story, and that is the return of Mr. Dan Wooden. He is back. I've not easily cancelled. The MSM can try. Ivan, he obviously is going to come back with his own show. I'm impressed that actually Dan just held his silence and waited until the due process was done. And it must have been difficult, but it's been months and he's waited. Then he's been kicked out of GB News and now he's launched this. So it's exciting and he is a voice that we need to have.
Oh, I love Dan. Dan's a friend and I'm so chuffed that it's now all done and dusted. And like you say, the air's been cleared and he's back and he's ready to be on our screens again, which is great. And I think actually we need more alternative media. I think it's important because of, well, we know, like with the propaganda and things that we've had, even like with what we were just talking about with regards to the vaccine, there was so much pushed and pushed and pushed by the media with regards to that. So Dan, yeah, it's brilliant. And I know that it was very, very hard for Dan and his, you know, friends and family. It was very, very hard on him with everything. It's not nice when your name's getting dragged through the mud. It's really not. But he, silence was golden. And I think his stance on it was brilliant. And I think that he had to play the long game and wait for everything to come out. But the truth did come out and it always does come out. And good on him.
I was kind of surprised, Madame, because he was obviously with GB News right at the beginning and he was one of their big presenters they brought. I think he was what, political editor for The Sun or something like that. So he was a big win for GB News to have at the start. And obviously it shows that there wasn't much loyalty there in GB News.
I don't think there was or is much loyalty in GB News. And I think that the way that whole confected outrage happened and how Calvin was treated, how Dan was treated and everything that was directed towards Lawrence and how he was treated, I just think it was so outrageous. And I actually don't think there was last year anything else in the media that was so, there was so much outrage over, especially on social media. I remember thinking when I first started seeing after the interview had happened, I remember I'd stayed up late that evening and I was scrolling and I was like, everything I'm seeing is to do with this interview. What's going on? What's wrong with people? It was just ridiculous. But one thing, the good thing that it did highlight, and I always think in these situations, you really do learn who your friends are, who has your back, and who is decent. And I think that the positive that came out of that was the friendships that they have and the loyalty between the individuals as opposed to the organization. I think you think the people that are on your side and you're fighting the same battle. A lot of people were quiet and a lot of people didn't come out and say, oh, you know, do we really need to have all of this outrage? Is it really that bad? They kept quiet. And I think you learn, okay, well, we're supposed to be on the same side here. We're supposed to be for the same thing. And we're clearly not. So it does highlight who's true, who's loyal. And I think also it also highlights that for an organisation to make out that they're for free speech and they, you know, want to get out there, people can come on and say what they want. Actually, they can't.
Yeah.
And no. It's the hypocrisy as well. The hypocrisy where on another well-established media outlet, they've got other people saying exactly the same thing about Lawrence, but there's no confected outrage because it's okay. You can say that about him, but he can't say it about somebody else. Or is it because the people that said it were female and he's male? Or it's just, it's the hypocrisy and one rule for one, and one rule for the other.
No, definitely. I've seen, I just want to ask, I've seen a number of your posts recently, and people can, I'll not bring it up, they can go and look in your Twitter, of the attitude that actually you don't get to choose what people put on you, and these labels that obviously Dan and Lawrence and Calvin have been put on them and on the rest of us. And you've got the whole Islamophobia issue with Lee Anderson, and then people getting called a racist for anything, and on and on and on it goes. And those labels that people put on, and I've seen just a number of interesting posts that you put up that that actually it's irrelevant, and that should not concern you, because we're not responsible for what other people say. We're only responsible for what we do. And I've enjoyed some of those posts you put up.
Yeah, I just think that it's very easy to kind of be conditioned into worrying about what people label us or what people think. And actually, like you just said, we can't control what other people say or do towards us. We can only control how we react to it, and also how we are in ourselves, in our character, and how we conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis. So don't have the time or energy to worry about being labelled. I've been labelled a conspiracy theorist. I'm actually quite proud of that, because most of the conspiracy theories are actually all coming true. So I kind of feel like I'm more of a factual theorist. So I've been labelled a lunatic. I've been labelled all sorts. And I just think to myself, well, I don't think I am. I don't go around doing crazy, the odd crazy thing, but not too many crazy things on a daily basis. So I really, what others want to say or do towards me or about me, I can't even give energy to, because it's just a waste of my time. And also, I think that you can get bogged down on in all of that, and that can actually take your focus off of what you're trying to do, the message you're trying to convey, and the work that you're trying to do and put into the whole, you know, highlighting corruption, you know, standing for freedom of speech, whatever it is that we're all doing. So yeah, I just think that I like to share stuff like that, so that if somebody sees it and they're kind of bothered by something or they're going through something, then they might think, actually, yeah, why am I worrying about it? So, but I think back to Dan and Calvin and Lawrence, I think how they all dealt with it, I commend them all for how they dealt with that whole thing, because like I said, it was confected outrage, and it's not nice, because it no matter how strong you are in the mind or how strong you are as a person, it does affect you, and it does make you also kind of get off the focus of you get up. You know, I know that, like, when Lawrence got up the day after, he was like, what's going on, why is everyone going crazy? And it's not nice, because he got up the next day and he had stuff to do, but it obviously got taken over by all of the outrage and all of the phone calls and emails and everything he was having to deal with over that one thing. So yeah, it's just don't be deterred by labels.
No. 100%. And I think it was that hit piece on you in the Daily Mail. I remember reading that and thinking, crap, I need to get her on. This sounds like my kind of person.
I know, I had quite a few people contact me. Especially to do with 9/11 and the moon landings. And they were like, we agree. How is that? How does that make you a lunatic? And I'm like, I don't know. But in the eyes of the media, I am saying the wrong thing.
It was good. Let's move on to another one of your posts, and I'll play the video. And this is finally some common sense, a win for the kids. Let me play the clip of it. This is from Sky News, being reported a lot of this sudden change in government policy that they think sexually abusing children is a bad idea, at least in the NHS. Let me just play the clip.
Let's just bring you a bit of breaking news, which may be of interest to some of you. It's about puberty blockers. Now, these are drugs that are used to delay the changes of puberty in transgender youngsters. In terms of how they are prescribed by the NHS, there has been a lot of controversy over the last few years about this. At the moment, they are only prescribed to children attending gender identity services as part of clinical research, and they are not routinely offered to children at gender identity clinics, but they are still offered. Well, the government, NHS England, has just confirmed that children will no longer be prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics. This is coming from NHS England, that just broke in the last few moments.
There's a lot to take from that, and that's only come out in the last week, and actually fits with Bad Law Project, I think just launching to actually stand up for parents, and we'll touch on that. But it does seem as though that's a huge breakthrough, although it shouldn't be a breakthrough, because it should never be allowed in the first place.
No, I agree. It should never have been allowed. It shouldn't even be breaking news, should it, that they've stopped it. I think it's absolute madness. And I just think that we need to protect the children, and we just leave the kids alone. It should never have been a thing at all. You know, children, teenagers, you go through puberty. It's an important part of our lives. It's where we're going from childhood into adulthood. It's the in-between bit, right? And your hormones are everywhere. Up and down, your attitude changes, you have all these emotions and feelings, you're not sure what's going on. We need to talk to children, and children need to be heard. If they need help, or if they're feeling like they're not themselves, that's all part of going through puberty. And yes, I get some people feel like they were born in the wrong body or what have you, but we should not be just going, hey, have these drugs. You're only 11 or 12 or 13, but it doesn't matter, or whatever, 15. Have these and it'll affect your body. Chop parts of your body off. You know, you can't have children when you're older, but that doesn't matter. That children can't make those decisions, because especially when they're going through that time in their lives. And we should be, as adults and parents and these institutions and organisations, should have common sense. That's why I said what I did on that post, that they're children, they're growing, they're going to go through these things. If they need to talk to somebody, if they need therapy, or if they need to express themselves, let them. But don't try to give them drugs and stop a natural part of human life, which is going through puberty, happen. We should never have ever been allowed to, they should just never have, that should, the puberty blockers shouldn't even be a thing.
They shouldn't be. And there are many aspects of this, and we'll not touch on them all because we'll be on here forever. And we had Billboard Chris on with us Monday discussing this very issue. But this is just a post, and bring it up from Bad Law Project. And following the government announcement, the NHS are ceasing the prescription of puberty blockers to children. The Bad Law team are pleased to announce we are supporting parents in a judicial review against the Education Authority to bring an end to the legal practice of promoting gender ideology in school. It's time to finish the job. That's so true, because we are partially along there, but if the ideology is still being promoted, then we're in effect playing whack-a-mole, because it's still being pushed. And to me, the Bad Law Project doing that is essential, that we actually do hold the government to account and don't let them out of this, and stop that at the school level.
Oh God, it's so important. And the work they do is amazing at the Bad Law Project. They have been relentless with regards to this, and they're very passionate about protecting the children and making sure that children aren't indoctrinated with this ideology. So, and rightly so, because like you say, the puberty blockers being stopped is one thing, but if they're still indoctrinating it into the children's minds at schools and making children think that they, whereas if you just take it away, let children be children, let them go to school, let them learn, let them play, let them grow how they should. We don't need to tell them and these ideologies, we don't need to push these things onto children, but there's obviously a bigger agenda going on with regards to that, because, again, back to common sense, surely teachers, surely education, the education authority would look at this and think, well, why do we need to push this and promote this into schools? Why does that need to be part of the curriculum? Why do we need to make it a big thing? And we don't. So I commend Bad Law Project. I think they're amazing. I've met some of the people that are involved in it, and they are tremendous human beings. They really are. And I think we need more organisations and people like that, that want to hold these, like the Department of Education, to account and take it to the government. And their report, I don't know if you read the report that they created. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It's well worth reading with regards to what they're doing. And it's important that we we get it there in the education system and we stop it. We've got this stop now with regards to the NHS and the healthcare sector. We need it now in the education sector.
Yeah, and I encourage everyone to make sure and follow what the Battle Project are doing on that and to promote that far and wide so the public are aware, because it's not something our legacy media will talk about. It's up to each of us using social media, using personal contacts, friends, family to spread that. Let me bring that you posted this by Elon Musk, and I did think it was quite funny, and we'll maybe have a laugh. Elon Musk is not the Messiah, definitely not, but he's doing some good. And he said, trying to help people understand what's going on right now is like going into a burning building to pull someone out, only to have them keep punching you in the face and demand evidence that the building is on fire, even after they admit they can see the flames. I read that and thought, hell, that is so true. That is exactly the abuse you get when people say, no, you're right, but no, I'm not going to do that. And it's so true.
It is so true. Do you know, I always get a bit nervous when you say, I read this post of yours, and I'm like, oh God, which one is it? Yeah, that is so true. That's how I felt during the pandemic. That's how I felt when I was discussing what the government were doing, the vaccination rollout, especially to my to close friends and family and colleagues and things like that. I was like getting so frustrated, because I felt like I was just walking up to a wall and banging my head against the wall every day. And so when I saw that, I had to repost it, because I thought, yes, that is exactly his analogy is brilliant, because he's like going into a burning building and then they're just punching you in the face. It's like, that's brilliant. It is so true. Even with the thing with the kids, the trans issue, ideology, the government, and even when you talk about who to vote for, or just like Islamophobia, I don't even know if I said that right, everything, it's just, you know, oh God, yeah, it is Elon hit the nail on the head. He really did.
It kind of is like that when you bring up a lot of these issues, I think it's sometimes difficult for people to understand maybe how not only corrupt, but actually how evil the trans agenda in children, the jab being ruled out, putting profit before actual safety, the Islamophobia when you've got people in hiding for fear up in Batley now for 3 years. And you present that and people think, no, it can't be. I think it's getting past that false idea. Certainly we have in the West, I think, that the government are good and care about us, where if you talk to someone from a communist background, they would think the opposite. I think that's often the biggest barrier.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. You can't teach people to, it's not my job to, it's not your job to, you know, I don't expect people to just agree with me. I think it's healthy to disagree, and I think it's healthy to have different viewpoints, like we said earlier. However, it's very hard when you can see something right in front of you and it's obvious to you, but to somebody standing next to you, they see it completely and entirely different. And that will be for various reasons, but it's when everything was going on with the pandemic and the whole safe and effective, I found that was the most difficult thing that I experienced with regards to that Elon's quote, because people couldn't understand why I would say that, because in their eyes, I was causing harm by telling them they didn't have to live in fear and they didn't necessarily need this jab isn't safe and effective. Their response would be, well, you're not a doctor. I'm not. That's correct. And why would the government say this? Of course, they want to save the population. They want to save people from being harmed. You're going to cause harm by saying what you're saying. And it's very hard to explain to somebody that doesn't want to see it and they don't. I presented lots of information. I sent lots of links to the analysis prints. I sent so, especially to people that I care about. I was like, just take a look so you can see the research that I've done on this. And still they would look at it and they wouldn't see. And I think it's because they don't want to see, because I think there's a part of their brain that doesn't want to acknowledge that possibly the government are corrupt and that possibly the government don't care about them. That's very hard, especially if you've been sucked into a system. And, you know, we all go to school. Most of us go to school. We get indoctrinated and we get into the wake up, work, pay taxes, pay bills pattern, you know. And so I think it's a lot of conditioning, major conditioning. And also it was mass psychosis, wasn't it?
It was, not completely. Here's another story, and this is actually going wider and wider. And actually, I first heard this type of thing in Canada. And this is a former Flemish parliamentarian, Dries van Langenhove, or something like that, has just been sentenced to 1 year in prison because supposedly racist memes were shared in a private chat group he was part of. And of course, this follows on from the Canada that are, you can, people cannot be arrested if the police believe they may commit a crime but haven't actually committed it. I mean, it's not one, policing thoughts, but two, things that are pictures that are shared in a private group, then is that up to the police? Should that be public? But a year does seem to be a lot. I haven't looked at the meme, but it must have been a bad meme if it was a year in jail.
This is insane. This is mad. So not only are they trying to police what we say, what's tolerant and intolerant, it's also now on our thoughts and what we will privately share with people. This is insane. Also, I do love a good meme. And the more outrageous and funny it is, I has more chance of me sharing it, send to all. And I do get in trouble sometimes because I have people say to me, you can't say that. That's really naughty. That's really stretching it. But if it makes me laugh, I share it. This is, and if this is going to come about, then I'm going to end up in jail 100%. I can't get my head around it. So, no. Has that been leaked? Do we know what it actually was about?
I don't even want to look because I could get in trouble. I could get reported for actually searching.
Okay, well, don't do that on my behalf. So he shared something to a private group, and he's now, so clearly somebody has leaked that, which is wrong.
Yeah.
Private group. I just think it's an intrusion in our privacy, majorly. We should be able to have a laugh, have a sense of humor, have banter with whether it's in private groups with our friends or family. How are they going to police this? I don't think it will, but I think they will try. I don't doubt that for a second that they're going to try and police what we say and do. Absolutely, they're already trying to do it, but I just can't see how they're going to police every single body that shares an outrageous meme that could be deemed racist or rude or misogynist or whatever. I've seen some cracking memes, you know, and they are a little bit risky or a little bit like, okay, that's a bit naughty, but it's funny because it's outrageous or whatever. We're allowed to laugh. We're allowed to have a sense of humour, but it's almost like they don't want us to have humour or have a sense or even be happy and laugh. We've got to be miserable, kept in line, don't say this, don't say that. I don't want to live like that. And I just think that it's crazy that this guy is now in trouble for sharing something that he felt he could openly share in that space with whoever else it was in that group. I just think it's outrageous. And it just shows you as well, anything we say or do now, whether it's on social media or in a WhatsApp group, could be used against us.
And of course, memes are in effect art. And we've had Paul McGonagall talking about how memes are a powerful use of art. And that's always meant to tell a story and right to the edge. And remember one of Bob Moran's pictures. And I was like, oh, I really didn't like. But again, that's what I guess art is about. Memes are about to actually shock, to make you think. And if they don't do that, then they're no longer art and they're no longer powerful and they lose their whole purpose. So yeah, it's going to massive chilling effect.
It's important that we have it as well, because like you just highlighted far better than I did, that it does make you think. And also it's supposed, things are, it's okay for things to be funny. it's okay to laugh at things, even if it is a little bit risky. I saw, you know, Bob Moran's done some great stuff. And I also know that there was a thing a couple of months ago that he did, which again went viral because it really triggered people. And actually, what I saw people sharing, I thought, although people were going real in depth about what he'd created, I thought his work is done here. He has done exactly through his art. He has provoked thought. He's provoked viewpoints. He's provoked emotion. He did, and he came out and said, "Well, that's what art is all about," and it is, whether we like it or not, whether we agree or disagree on a picture or a meme. It is art, and it is there to make you think. So, yeah, it's important. And I just think that we can't police every single thing we say and do. And we should be allowed to share things. We should be allowed to say things. It's important to keep that freedom.
Yeah. And those, all those blue-haired lesbians that have her and she in their pronoun, you think, well, they're not going to laugh at anything. So, I don't think they've ever cracked a smile in their lives. But moving on.
That's half the problem, though, Pete. Yes. I think half the problem is that we're living in quite a humourless world. I think that everybody, that there's so many, when I see somebody's bio, I can actually work out whether they have a sense of humour or not. I can prejudge it, even though I don't want to be like that, but it's the truth. I can be like, okay, they're going to be triggered by a lot of my posts, you know. And I just think that maybe if they had a bit more of a sense of humour or laughed a little bit more, they'd be happier and they wouldn't be so offended and triggered by everything.
I know. I was going through the mayoral candidates for London. One of them, the Lib Dem one, bright purple hair, and she and her in the bio. And I thought, I just want to trigger that person. That's all. What can I do? No, that's not right. No. But that's what you want to do.
Just smile and laugh. That trigger them as well. It's like, why are you smiling? Why are you happy? And it's like, can you imagine a world if we all woke up every day offended and triggered by every single thing that was put in front of us or said to us? It's so draining. And that's not the kind of world I want to live in.
100%. We'll touch this story, and then there's just a picture at the end, and I find this intriguing. The Home Office, and we're committing over 117 million over the next 4 years to boost security for mosques, faith schools, and community centres. We will always ensure that UK Muslim communities feel safe, confident, and reassured. It was interesting, said mosques and then faith schools, community centres. There could be anything, but mosques, of course, is specifically Islamic place of worship. But again, this kind of fits in with the extremism definition and the fear of the government to call out problems within Islamic communities. We've seen the grooming gang issue, but many others, most of those on the terror watch list come from Islamic extremist background, and therefore that's the issue. And once again, it's the government trying to fall over themselves. I didn't know that that mosques or Islamic communities were at threat, and yet it's interesting the narrative they're trying to put out.
It is interesting. I haven't seen anything about these communities needing extra security. I mean I don't really watch the news much, but I haven't seen it. I see a lot about Islamophobia. I see a lot about terrorism and things like that. I find it really frustrating that the government don't highlight what's been going on by certain, you know, like you just said, the grooming gangs, and they don't necessarily want to discuss it. They almost want to brush it under the carpet because of fear. Let's be honest, it's fear of being called racist.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're in this really tricky situation in the UK at the moment where you're not allowed to say anything about the Muslim community. If you do, it's wrong, it's racist, and you're not being diverse, you're not being equal. And I think I can see why there are a lot of people that get quite angry towards the government. And also, I think that it makes people, it comes across like it's directed at the Muslim community. And I can see how they probably feel like they get a lot of a negativity towards them. But it's because the government aren't dealing with, and they're not being fair, and they're not being equal. They keep pushing and saying diversity, and we want everybody to feel safe in the UK, and we want everybody to know that this is a place and we're open and we're equal. We're certainly open, that's for sure, when it comes to immigration. But so I just feel like the government needs to seriously grow a backbone, acknowledge what is going on with regards to the grooming gangs and certain crimes that are being committed. And also, we've got barriers on bridges in this country because of the amount of attacks that have been televised and people are very aware of that have happened over the years in this country. So that's good. They've put the money in keeping us safe. That's good. Everybody should feel safe. You know, the Muslim community should feel safe. However, it's news to me that there's an issue with security within that community. It is news to me. Maybe it's because we're not being told the truth, or maybe it's because, you know, I don't watch the news. I don't know. But I think as well, it's a lot of money to be put into something that could be possibly put into looking after a lot of other issues that are going on in this country. There's a lot of homeless people on the street. You know, there's a lot of people using food banks. There's a never-ending NHS list for treatment. There's lots of issues where that money could be put to. Not taking away from the Muslim community and saying that they shouldn't have that money. I'm just saying that, is it something that is top of the list?
Well, you're talking about real problems, Elizabeth, and the government wouldn't dare dealing with any of those. Elizabeth, I love having you on. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and sorry for rambling.
That's what I want you to do. Let me just leave we'll not talk about it because we don't have any time, but just to leave the viewers with this great pick, which I thought was fantastic. You're disturbing the peace, sir. And this was the individual holding a Hamas's terrorist sign up in London at a pro-Hamas, pro-Palestine march. And of course, he was arrested because he was the problem and not those marching. Interesting where we find police. And I would love to delve into, but we don't have time. Elizabeth, yeah, thanks.
I did go to that. It's a shame we can't touch on it, but it's one rule for one and one rule for another, isn't it?
It is. Of course, people, make sure the viewers and listeners follow Elizabeth California Frizz on Twitter, on X, however you want to call it, and you'll get many of her stories, her messages, actually those quotes that actually make you see things maybe slightly differently and aren't always caught up in the political culture war madness that we sometimes face, and have that level of humanity, which I think is important. So thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.